Aisha Hazarika on Times Radio with Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. Our can-do team of specialists will go above and beyond to help build your wealth with confidence. Visit candowealth.com today.
10 years ago, the concept of surrogacy might have been unknown to most people, but because of celebrities like Tom Daley, Elton John, Kim Kardashian and Naomi Campbell, we're now much more used to hearing stories of a woman carrying a baby for another couple or another family. Now, different countries have very different approaches. In America, surrogates are contracted and often paid tens of thousands of pounds to carry a child. Meanwhile, in France and Germany, the practice is banned. And in Italy, the government's again taking a very hardline stance. Surrogacy is already illegal, and the Prime Minister is seeking to criminalise any surrogacy done abroad. We know there's a lot of surrogacy that takes place in India, so there's lots of different rules across the world. Now, while it's legal in the UK, our law has previously taken a very tolerant, sort of hands-off approach. It is legal, but surrogacy agreements are not enforceable in UK law, even if you have signed a contract between the intended parents and the surrogate. Now, you can't pay a surrogate here in the UK apart from reasonable expenses, and they can come in between, you know, £10,000 to £15,000 to £20,000. But on the whole, the process is pretty light touch when it comes to regulation. But now, new recommendations from the Law Commission published this week could see that change. The new proposals could see greater legal certainty, transparency, and safeguards against exploitation that could work better for children, surrogates and intended parents. Well, to discuss this, I've got two real experts. We have Claire Fenton-Glynn, who is a professor of child and family law at Cambridge University. Claire, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And we have Sarah Jones, who is head of surrogacy at Surrogacy UK. And Sarah has been a surrogate herself a number of times, 5 times, in fact. Sarah, welcome.
Hello.
Thanks very much for joining us. Claire, I'll start with you. Will you just take us through, because many of our listeners won't be across the story in full details, just take us through what these proposals from the Law Commission would do to sort of change or improve the situation around surrogacy right now.
So currently, surrogacy is regulated after birth. So when the child is born, the surrogate is the legal mother and the intended parents have to go through what's called a parental order. They have to apply to the court in order to be recognised as that child's legal parent. And so there are certain criteria that they have to meet, but the court is ultimately looking at the paramount interests must be those of the child. So this has caused a lot of problems, first of all, with the surrogate being recognised as the legal mother, which is not the intention of the parties, and also a failure to be able to regulate the agreement, because the court is always going to make an order to reflect the social reality of the child, to reflect that the intended parents are the people who will bring the child up. So it means that breaches of the legislation have kind of been swept under the rug in order to facilitate that. So the Law Commission has been working on this project for about 7 or 8 years, and they've proposed now that surrogacy be regulated before the child's birth, even before the child's conception. So you would go to a regulated surrogacy organisation and make an application, say we would like to enter into a surrogacy arrangement with this woman to bear the child on our part. There would be a contract and agreement signed up where the parties have legal advice, they have counselling, and then the organisation would determine whether or not that agreement should go ahead. If they have done this, then the intended parents can, will be able to be recognised from the time of birth as the legal parents of the child.
Right, so they wouldn't have that gap after birth.
Absolutely.
And who is going to do the kind of oversight of all of this and the regulation of it, if you like?
It will be the HFEA, the Human Fertilisation and Embryology Authority.
And they currently oversee IVF, is that right?
Yeah.
And just give us an example, clear of, you know, examples of the sort of problems that do arise from surrogacy, the kind of problems that these proposals are trying to fix?
So there was a really famous case called X and Y foreign surrogacy that came before the courts in 2008. In this case, a British couple had travelled to Ukraine and had paid the surrogate something like 25,000 euros for a live birth and 235 euros per month during the pregnancy. So these are sums far in excess of what the legislation allows, which is reasonable expenses. Now, when the children were born, the surrogate handed the child over to the intended parents as planned, and the intended parents went to the British Embassy and said, can we please have a passport for our child? And the embassy said no. According to our law, the surrogate is the child's legal mother. The surrogate and her partner, they are Ukrainian. You have no legal ties to this child, and therefore you have to go and get a Ukrainian passport. So they went to the Ukrainian authorities, and the Ukrainians said, well, under Ukrainian law, a surrogacy engagement is enforceable. The intended parents are the legal parents from birth. Therefore, this child is not Ukrainian. So we had a situation where there was this clash of laws, where the child was left parentless, potentially stateless. They weren't able to easily come back to the United Kingdom. And then even when the courts asked whether or not when this was finally achieved, they were let in outside the immigration rules, the court was asked, well, should we make this parental okay. order to recognise the intended parents? And the court said, well, even though this is a commercial surrogacy, even though it goes against our legislation, it is far in excess of reasonable expenses, we're going to authorise it anyway for the best interests of the child. So you can see that the courts were needing to approve surrogacy arrangements that went against the spirit of the legislation
right.
in order to protect the children.
Okay, that's very interesting. I want to actually come back to you a bit later on looking at some of the kind of international comparisons as well. But Sarah Jones, really glad that you've joined us, because you, of course, are not just head of surrogacy at Surrogacy UK. You yourself have been a surrogate 5 times. What made you want to do it?
Well, when I first looked into it, it was 20 years ago. My first surrogate baby is coming up to 20. So those 5 surrogacy journeys have been spread out over 2 decades. And for me, it was more a case of why not do it. I knew that I would be able to do it fairly easily. I had a really good bond with the intended parents that I was having a baby for. And it was just genuinely, this is something I can do, and I can dramatically change somebody's entire life and help create a family. So for me, it was definitely a case of why wouldn't I do this? For me, it was a very easy decision to make.
And have you got children of your own? Have you got your own family?
Yes, I've got 3 children, 27, 16 and 14. They've sort of grown up around surrogacy and around the families that I've helped.
And do you still have a relationship with the families that you've helped with surrogacy?
Absolutely, yes. The first intended parents that I helped, they are my younger 2 children's godparents. We see the other children regularly. We've become lifelong friends, and that was always the intention from when we first started on our journeys together, and that has continued for the last 2 decades. So yes, we still see each other.
And you didn't ever have a moment when you were carrying the surrogate children yourself where you just thought, oh, it's going to be really hard for me to give this up because I've been carrying this baby?
Absolutely not, no. I have worked for a very long time working with children in various different guises, but more recently in the last 10 years as a childminder, and I look after those children on a daily basis, spend hours and hours with them and would do anything for them, but I would never say to their parents, oh, I quite like this one now, I'm going to hang on to it. And for me, it's exactly the same with surrogacy. It's their child. That child was created as they would have done normally had they been able to conceive themselves. Only I'm a sort of an extra part in that. So the baby was always theirs, and I never had any maternal feeling like I did for my own children at all.
Now, Sarah, just another question that I wanted to put to you, because a couple of questions have come through. I mean, many of our listeners who very much would describe themselves as feminists do feel quite morally uncomfortable about the idea of a woman kind of, you know, giving up her womb or renting out her womb for somebody else to have a baby. And they often feel there's quite a class element to it. They often feel it's like working class women who need it for money. Certainly in other countries, it's not quite the same in the UK. What do you say to those critics of the concept of surrogacy?
Okay, so yes, so the first thing I would say is they obviously should get to know surrogates who are very proud, strong feminists themselves, very well educated, not vulnerable. You know, there's a perception that we're all uneducated, poor, whereas in the reality we're overwhelmingly middle class, you know, normal people with normal jobs, teachers, educators, midwives, you know, that's sort of the group that we come from. And it is slightly patronising to say that we don't know our own minds, especially in the UK, where surrogacy is not for commercial purposes. Surrogates overwhelmingly do not want to be paid in order to be a surrogate. So it isn't a womb for rent. It is a gift from one person to another. That's how we see surrogacy. And for us, being feminists mean that we should have the right and the say of what we do with our own bodies. That is essential feminism. And the fact that some people want to stop us from making informed choices about what we do with our own body doesn't really sit very neatly with feminism. Okay. You know, so I would definitely say speak to some surrogates before you sort of make that assumption of us.
No, what wise advice there. And how do you feel? Because obviously in the UK, it isn't about a big financial transactions. It's expensive. What about countries where there is much more of a sort of financial transaction aspect to it? Would you like to see that removed? Are you less comfortable with that?
I'm very uncomfortable with it. I've been very outspoken against commercial surrogacy, especially overseas where vulnerable women are sort of hired to do this sort of job, for two main reasons, really, because surrogacy should be a choice that women want to do, not need to do. So that's a really big distinction. And also the fact that surrogacy agreements regulate what a surrogate can do with their own body really goes against my own sort of ethics. I don't agree with legally binding agreements that dictate whether I can drink coffee or, you know, travel further than 50 miles from my house, or to be fair, even when I can have sex with my husband.
It's like coercive control in many ways.
Absolutely. I mean, those practices do not sit very well with me. Okay. So commercial surrogacy overseas is not something that I'm in favour of.
And Sarah, just briefly, because we're just coming up to the top of the hour, how do you feel about these law commission proposals?
I'm very pleased. They have really, really listened to the surrogate's voice when putting together these proposals. So legally binding agreements will not be put in place. The surrogates won't have to be legally responsible for a baby that's not theirs anymore. And also they've clarified payments. So what is allowed and what is not allowed, which is great, because this sort of reasonable expenses was such a grey term that it was really really difficult to sort of pinpoint what that was. So that clarification is really welcome.
Thanks very much, Sarah. And Claire, I just want to come back to you, because I was really interested in a piece that you wrote about saying that the, you know, you've got all these different legal structures in different countries, and actually the world needs some cohesion on surrogacy rules. I mean, there was a case that you highlighted, a really shocking case, when it was an alleged that parents wanted to have children. There were twins. one had Down syndrome. This was in Thailand. And the couple decided to leave the child with Down syndrome and take the non-disabled twin back to Australia, which highlights, you know, lots of different kind of rules. How do you think the world can harmonise? Because it does feel like if there's all these different rules, then it's quite difficult to have a sort of ethical framework around this.
Yeah, and different countries do take different ethical positions. So, for example, in France and Germany, they view any type of surrogacy exploitative, whether money has changed hands or not. So they view it as a violation of the woman's right in terms of it's using her body for the ends of another person. Whereas in England, we view surrogacy as contextually exploitative. It depends on the relationship, as Sarah's been saying, between the surrogate and the intended person or couple, whether or not there's actual, coercion or sums of money paying, changing hands. So it does make it very hard when you've got kind of those jurisdictions, and beside them you have California, where it's a contractual free market. And how do you come to one position on this? This is one of the big things about the Law Commission's proposals have been to encourage people to use surrogacy within the UK, not to go abroad where there may be exploitative practices, where we can't control what's happening and can't ensure that the best practice is being followed.